What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of For the Love of Cinema, a movie podcast where our motto is, we just hope it doesn't suck. This is episode 372, broken up into two parts, A and B.
B.
372A, posting on 35, will be discussing an Ordinary Angel with Hilary Swank. And 372B, posting on 38, will be discussing on our Oscar predictions, which airs in just a few days' time. I am one of your hosts, Grayson Maxwell. Joining me, as he does every week, is my co-host, Roger Stillion. Chris will be out for this one particular episode. Roger, how are you?
Oh, you know, it's good to be back. I took off last week. Yeah, listen to the episode. Seems like I missed an absolute banger of a movie.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. It's the Marvel movies have been getting steadily worse as we go. I mean, this isn't a Marvel. This is in the Sony. I get that, the Sony-verse, mm-hmm. but it's hard to believe that a Spider-Man movie is this bad. I never would have thought that. I've been thinking about Madam Web pretty nonstop over the last week, and it's just, I just don't understand why you'd even release it or just not take the time to fix it. That's what I don't get. So
pretty not good, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I gave it the benefit of the doubt at a 2, and I still think that was too high, but. Mm. I'll leave it there for now. I might.
Well, I mean, if it's too high.
I've been thinking about like once every couple of months, we go in and we each pick a movie that we thought we scored maybe, you know, whatever, not on the dot, and just kind of talk about why we want to change it. I think that'd be an interesting kind of like a look back, but maybe once every 6 months or maybe once or twice a year, we can do that as a B episode.
Well, my opinion has never been incorrect, so I wouldn't have much to talk about.
Roger, your humility, I can feel it through the microphone. I really can.
It's good.
Super humble dude. What's going on with you, man, this week? What's going on?
No, not a whole lot here. Like I said, I had last week off. Had a work event to attend, so it was cool. Had a good time doing that. Getting ready. It's like 70 degrees here today, so that was cool. You know, a little bit of a taste of spring. So hopefully it stays that way, but it won't. And we're just kind of gearing up for next week. You know, next week's a long day for us. You know, we'll do our episode, and then we'll do the Oscar recap, which will all happen on the same evening, which is awesome. It's Dune week, so that's cool. Have you seen Dune yet?
No, I did not get around to it.
I have not. Chris has seen Dune.
Yeah, he was ranting and raving about it, so.
So yeah, he sent me a 3-word review, and I'll go ahead and just repeat that right now. It says Dune fucking rules.
Good. I'm glad he wasn't disappointed, in because that's important. I mean, there's a lot of controversy surrounding Dune. I'm not a lot of controversy, but there's a lot of conversations I've been hearing about, and I really do believe this. And I broke my own rule. Like, I love to see these movies opening weekend. There was a lot going on, you know, stuff happened to us today, and I wanted to see Dune this weekend. I did. I just couldn't get around to it. I'm completing a move. I'm trying to get all my stuff out of one place into another. You know, there's a lot going on for me, and I know for you guys there's a lot going on as well. Sure. So I like to see the big movies first weekend, but I didn't. But I got a ticket for the real IMAX in the AMC City Walk for next week. Very excited about that.
Nice.
I'm going to watch that in some awesome sound and picture. And I'm really excited about that. I hear great things about Dune. Obviously, Chris loved it, being the, you know, he's the Dune. He's one of the fanatics in the show. You're the other fanatic, of course. But I'm really excited about it. And I want to pose a question to you, Roger. And I want you to mull it over for our discussion for next week. Are you ready for this question?
Sure.
Dune 2. Now, all the ups and downs of all the changes films have been going through, let's say the past 20, 25 years, this is one of the biggest budget movies to be presented to us in the last, let's say, 10 years. And keeping in mind all the changes, do you think it's fair to say that I'm trying to figure out some way to ask, if you don't have any interest in watching Dune 2 from a personal point of view or from a movie point of view, how much can you really be in love with cinema? Now, this is just a question I saw this question on one of the sites that I just saw it pop up on one of the news sites. It was just a question asking people. There's no right answer, no wrong answer, but I thought it was an interesting one. So,
I don't really have to mull it over too much because I have an immediate reactionary opinion. And I would say, honestly, is you don't have to watch any movie you don't want to watch. Now, I hate fucking using words like this, but as a cinephile, okay, because I do watch a lot of movies, you know, it's hard for me to take somebody seriously that wouldn't want to watch Dune. But I mean, look, there's Dune's not going to be for everybody. It truly won't, especially if you watch the first Dune. If you watch the first Dune, I have a hard time believing that you wouldn't want to watch the second. But if you haven't seen it at this point, it's probably not ever going to come into your wheelhouse. You know what I mean? And that's totally fine. But, you know, this is a big deal for, you know, movies in general. Big budget, you know, lots of acclaim coming after this one. So I'm super pumped for it. And I would hope most people would be excited to see it. But obviously, if you don't want to, you don't want to. Just remember, if you don't see it, you don't get to opine about it.
I agree with that 100%, and I'm glad that you bring that up. But yeah, so next week I think it'll be a good discussion. I really want to. I'll text Chris sometime during the week I think he might jump on later for the B episode. But I want to pose the question to him, and just, you know, at least a 5-minute discussion next week about that, because I, of course, you know where I sit on that. I'm like, I'm super like pinky up about that. About cinema, and like, of course you have to, because it is the biggest budget thing that like, that's the top tier, man. By a director who knows how to tell a story in a movie, like, he's just so that's where I sit. I was curious where you sat on that.
Yeah,
I was curious indeed. All right, what else is going on? You're over in the valley. You got a fake taste of spring, but we all know that the Ohio Valley is going to get a snowfall this month.
Probably
a big
that's
one.
Fine. I fucking love snow, so it's good for me.
I love snow also. I'm kind of jealous that I won't be there, but I'm sure you'll get it. If not, then I'll be surprised, because it's like the last 10 years, that's what it's done. It's gotten oddly warm at the end of February, early March, and then you have like a 3.5 foot over the next 2.5 weeks snowfall, which is very strange. But yes, I won't miss it dearly. What else is going on? LA's pretty. There's so much Dune stuff everywhere. My God, man. Every other thing, advertisement, just Dune, 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 Dune. I sent you and Chris, I think I sent to both people, or just maybe it was just Chris. I would go in, like, I would take a picture of the dune or take a video as I was driving in the traffic of the massive dune banners. I just think that's amazing, because there are some up for all kinds of Netflix movies that have been out for like months and months, and those must be hard to take down and put up. But yeah, LA is in, Los Angeles is in dune mode.
Dune.
Yes, sir. So not much else going on there except, you know, work and thinking about Dune, because I see it everywhere. All right, let's get into the show, shall we? A little early this week. Usually takes us like 10, 12 minutes. Now we're at 7.5. So,
well, there's only two of us.
Only two of us. All right. Mm-hmm. This is episode 372 of Fourth Love Cinema, a podcast about movies, film, and cinema. It's posted each and every Tuesday and Friday at 5 a.m. on Podbean, which then distributes to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Amazon Music. Each and every week, we start with the box office, current and upcoming releases, what streaming trailers and movies of the week. Without further ado, let's jump into the box office. Now, I haven't looked at this yet, but Dune Part 2. Are you ready for this number, Roger? Are you ready, my friend?
I already know the number.
Oh, $81.5 million domestic with a worldwide of $178. Damn, that's an impressive number.
Yes.
Not quite Avengers number, but that's still a very impressive number.
Very good.
Yes. Bob Marley, One Love, number 2, $7.4 million domestic with a worldwide of $146. I'm glad to see that the movie's still making money. Ordinary Angels, number 3, $3.9 million domestic with a worldwide of $12. Not a strong showing for that one, but we're going to talk about that one in a little bit. Yep. Madam Web, $3.2 million with a worldwide of $91 million. So three weeks in, a $100 million plus superhero movie still has not broken the $100 million mark. That's just bad. Especially when we're in we're in the tail end of like the superhero phenomena, but I can't believe that. All right, The Chosen, Season 4, Episode 7 through 8. Thank you for that, Yohan, Roger. Appreciate that. 3.2 million.
Yeah, good too.
The worldwide of 3.9. I'm glad to see that those are getting like a constant $3.5 to $4 million uptake. I like that the people are at least going to see that. That makes me pretty happy that they're getting the butts in the seats however they can. Number 6 through 10, Migration, Demon Slayer, The Hashira Training, as Chris calls it. 8, Wonka. Number 9, Argyle. 10, Beekeeper is still in the top 10, although Argyle passed it up.
Can you do me one favor? Can you click on Wonka for me real quick?
Yeah, Wonka.
And check the total.
The worldwide is 624. That's pretty good, man. It's still coasting. It's still doing all right.
What a solid coasted out number, man.
Yeah. Well,
it's, like I liked well. Wonka. I thought Wonka was pretty good.
It was good. I don't think it was anywhere near the quality of the original.
No, but listen, it was very watchable, very kid friendly. I enjoyed Wonka.
Chalamet was good, and that's important. The lead was excellent.
But what has he ever been bad in?
That's a good point. And I'm sure he's excellent in Dune too. Dune Part Two as well.
I'd be really disappointed if I loved Dune and be like, fucking Chalamet though, bailed it in.
Jeez, what the hell happened to Timothy Chalamet?
What the fuck happened here?
That's great. All right. So I thought it interesting that Argyle passed up Beekeeper, but I noticed that last 2 weeks, Hideo Kojima, you know, huge video game guy. He, you know, makes a very famous
Solid
franchise. He's been tweeting about Argyle, of how he loved it and people should go watch it. I wonder how much that has to do with Argyle making $1.4 million this past week.
Well, so I actually read an article yesterday, or maybe it was earlier today, about how big of a flop Argyle actually is. And it's like tracking to be $120+ million flop for Apple and them. So that's interesting.
That's a shame. I really do think that's a shame.
It ain't gonna get any sequels.
No. It was intended to also.
It was intended to get multiple, apparently.
Well, I mean, it was supposed to intertwine with the Kingsman somewhere down the line, which I don't think we're gonna get either. But it is unfortunate. I'm just surprised the Beekeeper is still in the top 10. Although there's not really been much to push it out. So.
Well, Matthew Vaughn has another movie on the slate. Not that he's directing, but producing, coming out relatively soon as well. So
what is it?
See how that goes. I don't remember.
Off the top of my head, I don't know. Yeah, he's an interesting man with interesting stylings. That's what I will say. I mean, look, I love Kick-Ass and Kingsman, all of them. So I don't think there's a problem with him getting money for funding. But another flop like Argyle, and there we might start to have a bit of a problem with Matthew Vaughn. Because damn, that was a flop, and it's a shame. Because like, what I just never would have expected it. What we got on the upcoming? The upcoming is Flash Gordon, School Fight, Kingsman, The Blue Blood. That looks interesting. The Kingsman, The Traitor King. That's the Adolf Hitler one. I Am Pilgrim and Courage. Is there any one of those you were thinking of?
No, but all right.
Interesting.
Whatever.
I assume he's got his hands in a lot of things. I will say that. So I'm excited for whatever he's got going on. I'm super excited for The King. I just want to read The Kingsman, The Traitor King is explore the rise of Adolf Hitler. And then there's The Kingsman, Kingsman, The Blue Blood. It says, there's nothing there. Just the poster picture of
just a name.
Taron Egerton's attached and Colin Firth, but we knew both of those things.
So, yes, good.
Yes, good indeed.
Give me more Eggsy.
Eggsy, give me more all the Eggsy and all the generations of Kingsman, please. Thank you very much. All right, what we got going on next, Roger? Let's move on as we are getting long in the tooth on that discussion.
Tooth.
Let's talk about
what does that mean? Like, does that mean like the longer you talk about stuff, the longer your teeth get? Because like, I assume to say something
long in the tooth is means you've been talking about it for too long.
No, I mean, it means that way, but like it had to come from somewhere.
I don't know. You know what? There's a number of phrases I realized a while ago that like I know what the phrase means, but I don't know like the origin or etymology.
Where it came from.
I'd like to know the original. I bet you not a lot of people do know the original etymology of like some of these phrases. Like it's just been lost to time. Maybe I don't know. But
good, because that phrase sucked anyway.
I don't know if it's good. I mean, I don't want anything to be lost to time, but. Upcoming releases. Let's take a look for 1 second. We have this past weekend. If I can get the right thing up. All right, this past weekend, Dune Part 2, small movie. You may have heard of it. And this Friday, March 8th, which is this coming week, is Roger's not excited for Imaginary and Kung Fu Panda 4. I gotta be honest. I don't really. Does anybody care about Kung Fu Panda 4? Now I don't, but some people might. But
so I don't know. So I've been reading a lot of discussion about Kung Fu Panda 4. Now, normally I would say it's been heavily marketed, but like I haven't seen much marketing for it. Now, albeit I'm not the prime demographic for Kung Fu Panda, so it's probably on a bunch of TV channels and stuff that I'm not watching, which is totally fine. I mean, obviously, listen, it's a kid's movie. We know it. But the other, you know, the other three Kung Fu Panda movies have been wildly successful.
I know the first one was. I don't know if the other two are.
No, they're huge money. Huge, huge money. So
really? That's
yep. But the other thing is, too, there's no other kids' movies out right now. None.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. You're not wrong. Yeah, you're right. I don't. Yeah, I'm looking back at the. I mean, yeah, you're. I mean, it's funny because there's a lot of real adult movies, but you're right. There's not really a kids' one out there. Interesting. Yeah, good lord. You have to go back to December. Wonka was the last. I mean, I don't know if you count like Pixar Soul, like the re-release.
I don't though, because like in our local theater, like they didn't even come back out.
That's a shame. Well, I mean, it's not a shame, but I mean,
well, it's not because it didn't make any money.
Well, right, but why would you? I don't understand. It's still on Disney Plus. That's what I don't get. Is they didn't take it down temporarily?
Yeah, it's still there.
Doesn't make any sense to me. But oh well. All right, March 15th, the American Society of Magical Negroes. Arthur the King, Love Lies Bleeding, and One Life. It's a lot of movies. March 22nd, Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire. Man, that's soon.
Yes.
Sometimes I don't realize how soon movies are because we do this week in, week out. So like it's like, oh, yeah. Pixar's Luca is re-released that week, and so is Problemista goes wider. March 29th, Godzilla Cross Kong, The New Empire, In the Land of Saints and Sinners, which is a Liam Neeson. April 5th, The First Omen, Monkey Man, and Wicked Little Letters. It goes wider.
Oh God, we won't have to watch First Omen. Yes.
Why though? Because we'll watch Monkey Man.
Yeah, hell yeah, we'll watch Monkey Man.
I don't know.
You know we will. No, we won't.
Will we?
No, we won't.
All right, let's talk about April 12th. Civil War. That's an IMAX. That's one I'm definitely going to watch in IMAX. And Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Wait, what?
Is that? Yeah, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's. I thought that was an older movie.
That movie came out 30 years ago. Is there a remake?
There's a first teaser for the R-rated Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead remake.
Oh.
I thought that was like a movie from like the 80s. I was like, oh, well.
It was a movie in the 80s or and early 90s.
Did you watch the trailer for Sting yet, Roger?
No, sure didn't.
Interesting. It's terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, that's a hard no for me.
April 19th, Abigail and the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare and Sasquatch Sunset. Let's say we watch that. Why not? And then April 26th, Challengers, which we've been seeing a trailer out the walls.
Hey, the Tennis Gangbang movie. Finally happening?
I mean, I don't know if it's going to be a Tennis Gangbang movie, but to say that implies there's like...
Hey.
There's tons of tennis. There's tons of gang banging in the tennis movie. But I mean, it might happen once and implied. I just don't think it's going to happen more than
that's
once.
Enough. You build one bridge, buddy.
Fair enough.
You build one bridge.
And here's something interesting. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but Chris and I talked about it last week a little bit. On May 3rd, The Fall Guy comes out and a re-release of Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace.
Why?
What do you think? I don't know. What do you think about that one?
I mean... Okay.
I bet you that does quite well, actually. I mean, it's not going to make like $100 million. But
in comparison to what, though? So here's the thing. Those re-releases don't make any money.
I expect Star Wars to. I expect it to make somewhere between 5 and 10, maybe.
No.
I think it's fair to say it can make that.
No. Unlikely.
I think you're underestimating how pissed off people are at the sequel trilogy and want to go back to time when Star Wars was still kind of
Brother,
Star Wars.
I want you to remember one thing, that people absolutely fucking despised that movie when it came out.
they did, yeah.
So I don't want any of this, like, hold on, let's get back to the classics here. People fucking hated that movie.
No, and I know that. And I know that, well, the revisionist history in that movie is something that really pisses me off, because no one liked that movie when it came out. And everyone's like,
no,
oh,
they sure didn't.
Everyone's like, oh, I liked it. Like, no, you didn't. No, none of us liked it, because it was
Nobody
terrible.
Nobody liked it. And Spider-Man, the original Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, came along and kicked the shit out of it at the box office.
Yep, and George Lucas cried about it.
He did. He got real fucking upset.
He got real upset about that, which is insane to me. But
hey, good.
We'll just go through May. May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes and Tarot. May 14th. May 17th. A movie called Tarot.
Whatever.
I'm sure it's a horror movie with cards. May 17th, which is a Friday, Back to Black. If, with Ryan Reynolds, and The Strangers Chapter 1, which I'm actually strangely excited for. I'm strangely excited for The Strangers Chapter 1.
Strangely excited.
Yes, sir. May 24th, Furiosa, A Mad Max Saga, and The Garfield Movie.
Yes, the Garfield movie. Yes, perfect.
That's what we'll do that week. That's what we'll do.
We'll watch that instead of Mad Max.
May 31st, Ezra, which is, of course, a documentary on Ezra Miller. I'm kidding. I have no idea what this is.
Oh, God. I would watch that because that dude's fucking crazy.
So it's actually Robert De Niro and Rose Byrne and Vera Farmiga. It's when a stand-up comedian, Max Brendel, and his ex-wife Jenna disagree about how to address the needs of their brilliant autistic 11-year-old son Ezra, Max decides to kidnap Ezra and take him on a cross-country trip.
Fun family film.
Well, I mean Rainn Wilson, Whoopi Goldberg, Bobby Cannavale, of course Vera Farmiga, and Robert De Niro, Rose Byrne. That sounds like it might have some potential.
Yeah, it might be good.
I don't know. I might check that out. I'm glad I clicked on it though. Glad I clicked on it. All right, so that's as far as we'll go. Oh, Bad Boys 4, June 7th. I worked on that. Hey-o, all last year,
didn't
baby.
I heard it got moved again, didn't
it? Oh, did it? It's still slated here for June 7th. But you know what else is June 7th, but I don't think we're going to come out, is The Crow.
With Skarsgård.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wasn't that that movie was like kind of infamous for having a lot of death
the first one, Bruce Lee's son Brendan Lee got killed during the filming of that movie.
Yeah, but he wasn't the only one, was he? Or someone else got like really hurt.
Yeah, the movie's cursed. The franchise is cursed. Let it fucking die.
I agree. I totally agree with that. I don't know why you'd want to revisit that, but
remember the other cursed movie, The Sorcerer's Apprentice?
I really dig that movie though. I really do.
But like that movie was cursed. Like two people died on set, and like one guy got like paralyzed and whatever from like a set collapse or some shit.
God,
which is now they would just do it all in CGI and never have to worry about it.
Anyway, so that's up through June. I see other things like Pixar's Inside Out 2, which I think will be big. Bike Riders, but we'll get more in the weeks to come. We have a lot to talk about for the summer coming up.
Good, good, good.
Damn, man, you're yawning. You're making me yawn.
Mm. Yeah, I can't help it, man. I worked all fucking day. Always
working
exciting.
Hard. I'll talk about what's streaming this week. We are ending. We're stopping at the last stop on the weekly cycle of HBO Max, which I refuse to call it Max. I'm called HBO Max. My pick, and Roger always makes fun of me for this, but damn it, I love this movie, Wedding Crashers by director David Dobkin.
Oh, you did pick it.
I did. Yeah. Owen Wilson, Vince Vaughn, Rachel McAdams, Christopher Walken, Ilsa Fisher, Jane Seymour, Bradley Cooper, Will Ferrell. It's a feature from 2005. And I don't know what I was I'd seen the trailer going into this, but I didn't expect this movie to be not only wildly hilarious, but also one of the best written comedies of the last 25 years. I would put this up against almost anything in the last 25 years, even before that, comedy-wise. Mm. But I really do think this movie is all that in a bag of chips, as Will Smith would say on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I love this movie.
Whoa.
I will champion.
A bag of chips.
And a pickle, you know. And a pickle. And you know what? Throw in a Diet Coke. Why not? I do think this movie is incredible. I really love it. There's so many wonderfully tender scenes. Including, you know, even Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson are, when they're funny together, they have this wonderful chemistry together. Now, Roger, why do you not like Wedding Crashers? Why don't you tell people again why you do not like this movie?
So I think Owen Wilson's character in this movie is overly creepy. And I really think he puts off some like serious creeper vibes. And for him to have the fact that he expects this woman to fall in love with him after like 48 hours is wildly absurd. Wildly absurd.
Is it wildly absurd though, or is it just kind of what happens sometimes? Yeah,
no, not really.
Well, I don't know. I kind of like the Hollywood. That's kind of what Hollywood.
It was
does,
my first is. Asian.
I can't help it. I'm a coxman.
Because I'm a fucking coxman, John.
It's got some great scenes.
In the church. Yeah. No, listen. I've expressed my displeasure with Wedding Crashers. Listen, I will not argue that there are some very funny moments in that movie, because there really truly are. It's just something about it just irks me. Like
that's
the movie shifts. You know what
that's
I mean?
Fair.
He becomes
I
like a crazy stalker.
Well, see, that thing is like I don't know. I think the movie did a good job in just painting him as someone who just falls hard quick. That's
as a psycho. A psychopath.
Well, I mean, we all do it. It's just we're good at like reserving at each other, but I don't know. I don't have a problem with like you do. I also think it's incredible. So that's my thing. But you chose another good one from the 90s, I will say. Seven by director David Fincher, Morgan Freeman, Brad Pitt, Gwyneth Paltrow, Kevin Spacey, Arlie Ermey, 1995. Talk about it.
So much since you chose a comedy, I chose a comedy in Seven, the original buddy cop film of Seven, of Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt out there, you know, yucking it up around town.
Solving some light crimes, yeah.
Yeah, you know, having fun, you know, shooting the shit from time to time. So Seven is one of, like, it's a David Fincher movie. It's, like, legitimately one of the most, you know, mindfuck movies of all time. It's about a serial killer that's going, checking off the seven deadly sins. And, you know, they're out to catch him. And the way this movie ends, trust me, you didn't see it coming. And you really don't want to know what's in the box. Because, good Lord, son, this is a rough day for everybody.
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
That must have been painful. Can you imagine doing that? It's like, Brad, we're just going to run through this several times. Just change it up. Just say it like 15 times. Just go ahead.
What's in the box? What's in the box?
You just change your voice and inflection up and down. Yeah.
Excuse me, sir. What's in the box?
What's in the box? What's in the box you have, sir?
Cheerio.
Is it a cake? Thank you, sir. Like Seven a lot, and it's very David Fincher. Yeah. I bet you Seven is like, when someone says David Fincher, I bet you Seven pops into most people's heads as like the definitive David Fincher movie.
Yeah, I think it has to, right?
And I wouldn't even fault them for that. I mean, I think that's probably a decent. I mean, that's probably a very good look. But for Fincher, is like, yes, that's a good movie with great cast. And it does a really good job of, especially Morgan Freeman playing the older, wiser detective in like a film noir about like as a detective. What, Somerset? I think to the younger kind of gung ho, really doesn't know what he's doing, Detective Brad Pitt. And it's a good mix. It's a good match. And it works well for an ensemble cast. Yeah. I've always liked Seven quite a bit.
The other acceptable movie to the penultimate David Fincher movie is The Social Network.
Another excellent movie.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Just a quick rundown of what he's been, you know, specifically in charge of. Fight Club, Panic Room, Zodiac, which is an excellent movie. Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, Gone Girl, another crazy fucking movie. Benjamin Button, Social Network, Seven. Like, come on, man. Like, what a list.
What a rundown of film. You know, it's funny. So he did, I think it's called Mindhunters in Pittsburgh. Was that what that was? There was a show. And he did the first season of that. And when they first came to town, they said they warned everyone. I was on the other thing at the time. I forget what it was, but they warned everyone. They were like pictures around the office, like, do not mention Alien 3. Don't even wear a shirt. Don't bring it up. He doesn't want to talk about it. So then the big hubbub around Pittsburgh in the film production community for a few weeks was, oh, he just fired a PA. Well, the PA wore a shirt that said Alien 3, and like, he was told 1,000 times not to do that, and Fincher had him fired. And just,
of course he did, dumb fuck.
Like, yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, how mad can you be if you did exactly what you were told not to do? Like, how mad can you be? He had plenty of warnings. I just thought it was funny. Like, why are you, what, wait, I was like, why are you upset about this? Why are you upset about this? Like, you knew what was going to happen. They told you.
Hey, man, if you do that, you'll get fired. Oh, okay. I did it. How dare you fire me?
Yeah, it's insane. But I mean, that's I like Fincher a lot. Even with that, I admire the shit out of that man when he comes to making movies. Like, he can craft a movie. So good choice, Roger. In Seven.
Yes.
Laugh
it up. Have your family sit around, you watch it, you know, everybody will be happy.
You know, put a bowl of candy corn, pass it around the room.
Yeah. You
know, everyone share one Diet Coke. Yeah, just pass it around. Can you imagine sharing one Diet Coke with four people, just passing it around?
Are they related to me?
Yeah, so your family.
No.
Even then, no? wait, why'd you ask the question then if you're just going to say no anyway?
I don't have to answer that.
So those are available for your viewing pleasure if you subscribe to Max, Wedding Crashers, and Seven. Let's talk about some trailers quickly, Roger. Let's talk about Asphalt City with Sean Penn, Ty Sheridan, Michael Pitt, Catherine Waterston, Mike Tyson. It's a feature. What are we thinking about this?
Looks pretty gritty, you know, thriller, suspenseful. You know, I hope it's good. Sean Penn's always usually pretty good, even though he might be a crazy person too. Do love Ty Sheridan. I'm glad to see he's getting some serious work. Hope he's successful. Hope this movie's good. Because it looks like, so here's the thing with this movie. It's either it's good from start to finish, or it's great for 10 minutes and absolutely a slog for the rest of it. So,
which is a very real.
It's a real possibility, absolutely.
Given the trailer, I think it could just go either way. It really could.
Yeah.
Coin flip, it could go either way. Because, I mean, there are parts in the trailer like, okay, I could get, and then there are parts like, this is generic as hell. Like, everything in this last minute and a half is just super generic as hell.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, that's what I'm worried about, is seeing everything in the trailer and then there's nothing to be. But you're right. Sean Penn he can turn in a great performance when he wants to, an excellent performance. Ty Sheridan is a good young actor. I've always liked Michael Pitt. Catherine Waterston is great. I mean, Mike Tyson, we all love
to see Mike Tyson getting some work.
Get some serious acting roles for once, yeah. Like, I was just thinking, I watched The Hangover earlier this week and. You punch
the guy. So that's the other penultimate. Comedy of that era between that and Wedding Crashers. So the original one, not the other. Third one's not too bad. The second one's a fucking abomination.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, if you watch them as a trio, it's not so bad. But if you just
I can just watch the first one.
Yeah, but that's where it should have stayed, is the first one. Or, you know, had a well thought out sequel, you know, 5 years later. But the first one is far and away. You're right. I think Wedding Crashers and, at least for me, Wedding Crashers and Hangover probably define that 10-year era.
The best R-rated comedies, for sure.
Of like 2005 to 2012 or something like that, yeah. Because if you go below 2005, you're getting old school territory. Was that rated R? Yeah, well, that was rated R.
Yeah, of course.
You're getting in some other legendary territory, like a Road Trip.
You're my boy, yeah. Blue.
Yeah. So, yeah, I agree with you. That's another penultimate of those. Asphalt City, though, looks like it really does have some potential. And I like, I hope it's good, because I like a gritty crime drama with, you know, cops at the heart of it. They can be good because, of course, you know, the morals are going to be gray. And that's where I think things are the most interesting, is when you don't really have a white hat hero. You have kind of old, gruff kind of warriors that they don't really do bad, but they don't really do good either. I kind of like that feature. Let's talk about Long Legs with Nicolas Cage. What are we thinking about this?
Dude, what is this trailer?
And
why is it so goddamn loud?
I don't know about that, but this does look creepy. It's only a teaser. It wasn't really a full-on trailer, so. But the image of Nick Cage and like putting the hands in front of his face, like very spidery. Okay. You had the... Chris and I were actually really upset that you didn't make it last week because we had the Sting trailer, and
it's a shame.
Well, you should watch at least the trailer. You and Holly
should I? Know. No, I don't need to do that.
You and your wife should curl up on the couch, you know.
I should not.
Turn on the old Sting trailer.
Only if you get around your like nieces and nephews and watch Seven with them.
Fair. I mean, yeah, okay, whatever. Okay, so let's talk about Long Legs. So what's your thoughts right now on this teaser trailer?
I mean, looks super weird. Have no real idea what's going on. Typical Nicolas Cage movie for me at this point. So,
yeah, that's probably pretty good. Yeah, we didn't watch Dream Scenario, but I heard that was kind of off the rails.
I hear it's pretty funny, but you know, whatever.
Well, it'll be on Max here very shortly, so we can watch it.
As far as I know, that anything Nicolas Cage does at this point is just, you know, has potential to be awesome or just off the wall crazy. So,
yeah, but what was that one we liked where he was like playing himself or with Pedro Pascal?
Yeah, that was the unbearable weight of massive talent.
Yeah, that actually wasn't terrible. I didn't mind that one quite so much, but
no, it was because it was funny.
Let's talk about Prey with Ryan Phillippe, Mina Suvari, Emile Hirsch as a feature.
Pretty sure we saw this movie 2 years ago when it starred Idris Elba
and Beast.
About being stuck with lions chasing you in the Serengeti. Like, I mean, here's the thing, bro. Don't go there.
They didn't. They crashed on a plane.
Hey, did they end up there?
Fine. Yeah, they are.
They fucking went there then.
Well, I mean, this to me is like, what's that one film with Liam Neeson that I like so much with the wolves?
The Gray.
I like The Gray a lot. I think it's got a lot of great things going on. But yeah, that's a different kind of movie though. But I do like the Gray. And it's funny. So I just to confirm the cast before I typed in Prey in IMDb. Let me tell you, 15 movies came up and 12 video games before Prey, before this movie came up.
Well, I mean, didn't we watch, what was the last Predator movie?
Yeah, Hulu. It was called Prey.
Yeah, yep. And that movie was awesome.
Yeah, there's like four or five other movies.
And they're making a sequel to that, by the way. Did you hear that?
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Good.
We didn't expect that to be as good as it was. And it
fucking ruled.
Yeah, that movie was great. That's another thing that, like, that's to Hulu's credit. Good for them.
Yep.
Good for them. I don't really know how to feel about this one. I like Ryan Phillippe. I've always liked him. I especially liked him in his one late 90s with, what's that? Come on, Cruel Intentions.
He'll never be bigger than Cruel Intentions.
Yeah, that was huge. I always liked that one. I like Crash. My God, hell of a movie. Best Picture winner, Crash.
Sure.
It's a lot of people love the dog on that movie, but
is Ryan Phillippe a big draw anymore? Because I would argue that he's not.
No, I would argue you're right. He's absolutely. I mean, no. I would imagine it's because no one else wanted to do this movie, so they just, you know,
I should have called Idris Elba.
Well, they did 2 years ago.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm drinking chocolate coffee right now, Roger. It's delicious, I gotta tell you.
I believe that's called a mocha, sir.
It is. Well, I mean, it's okay. It's like a chocolate mocha coffee. It is good. It's delicious. That's why I took a sip. Anyway, so I don't really know what to think of Prey. I think it's one I will be skipping unless it's
I think it's a B movie, and it looks like it's not going to be on anything I'll ever watch. So
that's fair. I mean, I don't. Yeah, streaming service. Here we come for Prey. Makes me wonder what because I mean, even though Ryan Phillippe isn't, or Mina Suvari or Emil Hirsch, like none of them are A-list at all, but like they are people that were once big names. So I wonder what kind of paycheck they command, and if so, what kind of budget is Prey? I mean, like we're guessing what, like 10 to 15? Not that it matters.
I would say less than 20.
Yeah. Like, what's it going to bring in? It's not going to do anything theatrically. It'll do nothing, crickets, and then it'll go to streaming service and just, you know, live a quiet life on a streaming service for 6 months and then just disappear completely. That's how that will go.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. Let's pivot a little bit to the movie of the week, In Ordinary Angels. Now, I'm excited about this because I also didn't quite know what to expect.
So before we get talking about this, I want to bring up something that we talk about on here on a semi-regular basis, pretty much a yearly basis. We always talk about these movies that are like the feel-good movies, generally have an overly religious theme to it. You know, we always get some of these right around Easter time. The thing is like it's a little bit early on that because it's not quite, you know, Easter's not for another couple of weeks, right?
Right.
So I kind of wondered why we got this now, but then I watched this movie, right? And here's the thing, spoiler, it's a decent flick, okay? Not like Best Picture winner, but trust me, there's a lot of worse things we've seen. But it's not really overly religious either. And I thought that was kind of weird because like I thought this was going to be like a layup for that kind of movie, you know what I mean? I did too,
definitely, yeah.
Now, listen, I don't think it hurts it or hinders it in any way because it's really not, but it's kind of, I was just surprised by that because this movie even with the title, right, just definitely fits that kind of, you know, assumed role, I guess.
Well, and with like the screenshots we kept getting of like Alan Ritchson in the snow, and you know, it just it had that vibe of super religious, which I'm not that guy, but I'm glad for my own part, I'm kind of glad that they kind of just towed the line with it instead of went full on with it. And there's nothing wrong with religious films.
We've seen a couple of them that have been okay. Like what's the one where the kid falls in the ice?
I was just thinking about that one. I don't know, but
I don't remember the name. But I mean, here's the thing: like, I thought that movie was okay. You know what I mean? Like, it's you know, just because it has an overly religious theme does not mean it's a bad movie.
No, not at all.
Trying to remember what that was called. That was two or three years ago, right? 3 years ago,
2018. It had Josh Lucas in it.
That was 2018.
The woman from This Is Us.
Yeah, bro, that was six fucking years ago?
Dude, 2019 was called Breakthrough.
Oh, yeah. I mean, still, that's 5 years ago. Goddamn, yeah. COVID ruined my brain, man.
Dude, it ruined all my
brain. There's just a whole time frame that is just gone. Like, that felt like, I remember sitting in the movie theater watching it like that was like 2 weeks ago.
That's hilarious. Since then, he's had a lot of movies since then. But yeah, that was 2019. That was Easter time 2019. So about
what was it called?
Breakthrough.
Breakthrough. Okay.
Like five-ish years ago. Yeah, 4-ish years ago. Yep, yep, yep.
God damn. That was Easter.
Isn't that nuts, though, how time just flies, man?
Wow. Wow, I'd have lost that bet.
Yeah. But yeah, that one wasn't bad. And we look, we every year there's at least one, if not two, that we check out. But
well, yeah, it makes me wonder if we're going to get something else that's just going to pop up all of a sudden. So
it could, it could, because this one's not doing terribly, and it's, you know, I happen to notice that The View is talking about it almost every week. So sure. I mean, that could push some people. The View certainly has a dedicated audience.
I will say, though, that, you know, I went to see this at 5 p.m. our 5:15 show on a Thursday, and it was just me and my wife.
Yeah, I didn't expect there to be a big crowd. But let's get into some particulars. So,
sure.
The tomato meter. Now, have you seen the tomato meter?
I have not, but I assume, here's the thing. I assume it's fairly high, right?
But no. Okay, what do you think is fairly high?
I'd probably say 75.
85. And
85. Wow. Okay. Okay.
The audience score, you want to take a guess?
Probably 80.
One shy of perfect.
99%
audience score.
Wow.
And here's where, now, and I know, Roger, you know me well enough to know that you know I love this movie. You know I loved everything about this movie. And I'm part of the 99%. I was in tears for most of it. I was.
Sure.
And it's, so that's what I want to say, like, I'm an emotional, you and I are both emotional movie guys, and it's,
yeah, absolutely.
Did tears, did you swell up?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, here's the thing, though, this movie is the problem that I have with movies like this, right? Where the subject matter, because, like, I mean, I've said this for a long time, like, I used to not ever really be that involved with things, but anytime it involves, like, little kids, you know, since I've had kids, it fucking gets me, man. Like, I can't. Like, avoid it. It's just something that happens. But, like, this movie, you know, it invokes emotion, and most of it's positive. But there are some times here, man, like, it's sad. Like, what this family deals with is fucking heartbreaking. And I'm glad, because, like, look, this is a true story. And, you know, I talk about true stories all the time when I don't think that they give us the true story answers that we want. This movie does everything right at the end. They give us a recap. They give us, like, real news footage. They do all the right things there. And thank you for doing that, Ordinary Angels.
So I agree. I like
you,
that.
You abided by the rules of based on a true story. So thank you.
I feel more connected to the movie in that way.
Yeah.
And so my problem with Rotten Tomatoes, now here's the Metacritic, 57.
No, I mean, that's probably right.
I don't agree with that.
And well, here's the thing. The movie's got problems.
Sure, but obviously over the course of 2024, and I've yet to discuss this with you and Chris, but I'd like to move away from scoring a movie and move closer to, you know, if we just talk about the Rotten Tomatoes, the Metacritic in the beginning, why we either agree with or don't agree with what people are saying about it. I think that's
that means we have to go off somebody else's opinion and base that's our own off of what they say.
But see, you know? I think in this one, Ordinary Angels is not a 57.
I mean, do you think it's an 87?
Oh, I don't think it's an 87, but I think
it's a 77?
I think that's closer to what I want.
Well, I mean, knowing how Metacritic scores, I mean, look, Metacritic's harsh on movies. It just is, you know.
But it should be harsh. That's the thing. It's like, so the movies that are excellent are excellent. It should be harsh.
I mean, here's the thing, though. This movie's not perfect. It's not excellent.
No.
It's good.
It is good. But the emotional, the in-between is what I'm always trying to talk about. I think this movie exists in the in-between. So let's talk about it outside of that. So let's get some particulars out of the way. So Ordinary Angels.
This movie stars two famous people and then a bunch of fucking nobodies.
Yeah, but they do all right. I mean,
that's not a knock on them. I'm just saying there are two famous people in this movie.
Hilary Swank, Alan Ritchson, which I have to say, I want to talk about Alan Ritchson, but let me get through. And then there's Emily Mitchell, Skywalker Hughes. By the way, how big do your cojones have to be to name your child Skywalker?
Bro, that's fucking awesome.
Dude, is it? Or is it like you're setting them up like if they don't achieve the world, then they have failed?
Because they just call him Sky for short, man.
Sure, fine. But Nancy Travis, Tamala Jones, Drew Powell, to name a few, Amy Acker, directed by John Gunn, and the screenplay, Meg Tilly and Kelly Fremen Craig. Now, Fremen, Interesting.
Fremen.
So let's
start a car.
So you are a fan of Alan Ritchson. You like Reacher.
Oh yeah, hell yeah. Who doesn't? Watch a big man just whip the shit out of people. Let's do it.
And it's funny because like whenever I go to work at the lot that I'm on, like there's this massive Amazon and like Alan Ritchson and all like the golden sun hitting his skin with his perfect hair. I look at that picture every day. Yeah, hulking Hulk of a man.
He's just a monster of a human being.
He is. He's not far off of Chris Hemsworth, truth be told.
He's bigger than Hemsworth.
I was just gonna say. Actually, I think he's bigger than Chris
Hemsworth. he is bigger than Hemsworth.
So Reacher. You like him, Reacher, yeah. And he is doing some ass whipping in Reacher. Now,
sure,
this is a bit of a different take for Alan Ritchson, and I think I'm going to agree with you on this because I think this shows his dimension quite a bit. It shows his how much he can pivot and do something like this very successfully.
Yeah, so because I mean, with his role in this movie, you know, he's the dad. He's the one dealing with the most of the turmoil. You know, his wife dies. You know, unfortunately, she has some really rare disease. And then his youngest daughter also has a rare disease, not the same disease as the mom either, by the way, which is just wild. And she gets put on a list for a liver transfer. And like, look, man, they don't have any money. You know, everything's gone to shit. They're scraping to get by, right? But here's the thing. He's a good guy. He's trying to keep his family together, keep everybody, happy, doesn't want to lose the house. And in this movie, and I'll talk about Hilary Swank's character in a few minutes, but in this movie, like Alan Ritchson's character plays such a wide range of emotions because like, look, if I was in his shoes as a dad, as a husband, I would fucking hate everybody. I would be so mad. I'd be punching holes in the wall. Like, bro, life sucks, right?
Yeah.
And he does a good job at being frustrated, but like believable as a parent, right? Because sometimes life does suck as a mom and a dad, and things are fucking hard to deal with. And you have to keep it together for your kids because, you know, as much as you do want to headbutt the wall and, you know, crash your car into a fucking ditch, it doesn't help anybody. And, you know, there's a real possibility through most of this movie and his character, you know, he understands it, that not only has he already lost his wife, there's a real chance that his daughter may die. But that's not just it. He has another daughter that he can't just give up hope. You know what I mean? He can't drink himself into oblivion. He can't go out and fucking just end it, right? He's got to stick it out and go through. So like the range that this guy covers through this, which is surprising, because like, look, I'm not trying to knock Alan Ritchson, but like we've only ever seen him just be a big Hulk and bruiser, right? Like those are what his roles are because like, look, dude, he's a monster. He's believable in this role. And I respect him for that. Like, I think he did a really good job at being this movie. And legitimately, I know this movie's only not rated R or anything. He never utters the word fuck one time, which I don't know how, because that would be me every minute of every day if I was in this role.
It's a tough situation.
It's a tough role. But I think he does a really good job and it's very believable about how he goes about his daily ritual. So I'm happy for him in this role.
Well, that's the thing is, so the emotional center, of course, is Alan Ritchson, who has to keep it together for his family, even though he's not keeping it together. And Hilary Swank, who you have a pretty good idea of why she's doing what we don't know. And that's a weird thing to say, but everyone watching this movie is wondering partway through, like, why is she doing this? What are we missing? And then we understand. And what I like the most about these two people is not only are you presenting characters of one family who've been devastated, but two families that have just been demolished.
Yeah, so they're just broken.
To the point where there is nowhere but sideways. There's no up. There's no down. It's just sideways. You know, and it's just, I respect like hell this movie for putting those two characters in the same place and telling a story together with them, because it never once seems like it's too much. It never seems like it's trying too hard. It never once seems super campy, which it could have very easily done. It all seems real and believable. And I think that's super important when you're telling when you're trying to adapt a based on a true story, because you want to get some of the elements right. And I think that's super important here. And it's The scene, dude, and just as an example, when he has to, when he is unable later in the film, and I want to just stop, we'll go back here in a second, but when he is unable to get his child to the airport, he has to call the hospital and say, give the liver to the next person. My daughter will not be. You know how hard that would be as a father to do that? Yeah,
because like, and here's the thing, in this scenario, it would probably be a death sentence for that little girl.
It would have been, absolutely would be.
So she's already, you know, already made it longer than what they'd expected too. So, but let's rewind. Let's talk about Sharon for a minute here.
Hillary Swank.
This movie revolves primarily around three, you know, Ed and his family and Sharon. And Sharon is the angel in this movie, right? So Sharon is a hairdresser in Louisville, Kentucky, who sees that the story about their family, the mom dying, what was her name? Emily, I believe is her name.
I think
when she passes away, you know, sees the national or sees the story in the newspaper and stops by to like give her condolences to the family. And like, look, that's weird. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. People don't generally do that. You know, people you don't know, you send flowers, you know, sorry for your loss, that sort of thing. She has this like a little awkward introduction with the family, and then they kind of become intertwined because then she finds out very shortly afterwards that Michelle, the youngest daughter, has this rare liver disease. And she takes it upon herself as a small business owner to have a fundraiser to get them a little bit of money to try to help out with medical bills because Ed and his family are fucking drowning, brother. They are drowning in debt. I mean, they don't have he's an independent roofer. He doesn't have health insurance. You know, he's like what at one point they're like $400,000 in debt for the medical stuff. They haven't even paid off the dead mother's medical bills yet. And the Michelle's bills are just stacking. So she takes it upon herself to help this family out. And like, look, they're very reluctant at first, you know, they're happy to take the money. But, you know, Ed's closed off. He's reserved. And, you know, they kind of have this back and forth. Like, she basically forces herself into their life to help them out. And is it a little bit awkward? Sure. Is it something I could absolutely see happening? Sure. And we know that something similar to this did happen because it is a true story. With Sharon, played by Hilary Swank, who is great, by the way, in just about everything that she's ever been in. And Grayson was a coward and talked to her about our podcast on an airplane once.
Sat right next to her, right next to her.
told him he should have told her to listen to our show. Didn't. Coward.
Did not.
I wish Chris was here. He would fucking appreciate that. but yeah, so she plays this role of this like slightly unhinged person trying to help these people out. And, you know, then we get to see a little bit of her backstory. We find out, you know, she's has a broken family, you know, husband ran out on her, you know, pretty much estranged from the son. And then we find out the real problem, spoiler, she's a functional alcoholic, right? And she would kind of go through her ebbs and flows, and, you know, she's doing what alcohol has, what's called, alcoholics call a moment of clarity, where she finally realizes that she's only doing this to avoid, you know, being the alcoholic while she's still drinking. And like, you know, she comes through her own cycle and gets clean. But like, she has some very good moments, like when she's at the hospital talking about getting some of the debt forgiven. Like, bro, like that scene was awesome, right? When she looks right at the lady and they're like, we can't just get rid of this. And she was like, well, I did some research, ma'am. She's like, what if this was your daughter? You know? Would you just laugh it off? Is this funny to you? Like, that scene was great, man. Like, she just, I mean, Hilary Swank's great in just about everything, let's be honest, but like, she's just full guns out. And, you know, she gets an impossible task, you know, of trying to secure an airplane. And she's like, I got you 5 airplanes. You know, she went to every single person she could get a hold of and like worked her way up this chain, talking to CEOs of big companies around Louisville, Kentucky about, you know, getting a private jet for this girl for when the time is right. So not only did she get one, she got 5. And like, that was really awesome to see how those things unfolded. And all while she's trying to work through her own demons and make her life better and also still be in touch with this family who at some point basically says,
you know, we don't want you around here because you're an alcoholic. So yeah, it's kind of a wild ride for that character, but it's very, very good, I think. And also that some of the stuff emotionally, that's like some of the real highs and lows. You know, when she presents Ed the letter about, and, you know, gives him a picture frame, and she's like, thought she might want a frame to frame this, and then she gives him the bill saying that $430,000 of medical debt was fucking erased. Like, bro, I was like, tears were rolling out of my eyes, brother.
Yeah, I agree. Mine were too. I mean, that's one of the many intersections of times that I was tears, man, the whole time. I was just, yeah. I was trying to hold it back because I didn't want to look like, but I was blubbering. I think you're right about Hillary. What makes Hillary Swank great is she just, the way she plays the character, she brings such a, I don't know how to, like a tortured confidence to, and that's, she really has to play it weird and different before we understand why she's doing what she's doing. Because like, it's just, it's weird that we're seeing all this play out before we understand her motivation and why she's doing it. Outside sure. of, just a normal person of wanting to help. And I understand you see someone sees a story and then they want to help. I understand that because, I mean, people do stuff like that all the time. And it's,
well,
it's,
wanting to help and going the level of help that she does are two totally different scenarios though.
Well, that's the thing is there's the parallel there that the movie does draw. And I think it draws well is she wants to help when she sees the article in the paper about the sure. child that's going to die. Okay. And she pretty much has lost a child. I mean, he's not dead, but,
they're estranged.
Yeah, he's completely lost. And I think some of the better moments in that movie are with her son, because it's so heartbreaking.
Oh, man, when he shows up at the end, though, I was like, son of a bitch.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit much. I thought it could have been a bit much.
I mean, maybe here's the thing, though. That absolutely could be a true thing, though.
It sure could. But we, as you see, that scene takes place at night, which makes it more dramatic. It actually took place during the day.
The middle of the afternoon, sure.
In the afternoon. Sure. So it's a lot less dramatic, but still awesome. But like you can't do what they were doing with the whole circle back to the beginning with the butterfly unless it's dark. So they had to shoot that at night. But it's,
sure.
I agree. That's Hillary Swank here is what makes this movie work. I want to say probably 65-45 Hillary Swank and Alan Ritchson. That's probably the new, but like her as, I don't want to say he's bad as Ed, but her as, I think she's the power one here, right? She's like,
well, I mean, she's being. Here's nothing against Alan Ritchson, but I mean, she's Hillary fucking Swank, brother.
She is. She's great at what she does, and I can imagine she lobbied for this. I don't know. I have to do some research, but I can imagine she wanted this role real bad.
Well, so they both must be have some other kind of connection to this movie, because the entire budget for this movie is only $13 million. So,
oh wow.
I mean, Hillary Swank a couple years, 10 years ago was like as big of a star as you could be. Not that she's still not awesome, but it's like wow. You know, this whole movie only cost that much money.
Well, yeah, I mean, I could see how they would have gotten it such low budget. There wasn't really a lot of complicated low locations or anything, so I understand that.
Sure.
It's just, I think the big surprise for me is here is Alan Ritchson, too, is just.
Well, he does great.
That big hulking guy, he can play a tender father who is just, he's been broken, beaten, and battered so badly that he's unrecognizable as a human being. For some of this movie, and I don't think you can watch this movie without someone in your brain referencing what was the movie with Will Smith, Pursuit of Happiness.
Sure.
Yes. When he, some of those moments in that film are super tough to watch too, and
when they lock each other, lock him in the bathroom.
Yeah, and he starts to cry because he can't provide for his kid, and
yep.
Oh my gosh, and the scene, especially when in the end, when the guy's like, thanks for giving me my $5. Can you wear a tie? Can you wear one tomorrow? Yeah. And it's like, and when Will just looks at the guy, and like, he just wants to cry. And like, that's such a great, but like, also Ed has that moment in this movie too, when he learns that all the medical debt has been erased by, it's a great moment, man. It's meant for film. Absolutely meant for film. I hope that's a real story point for this story, because that's.
I feel like it had to have been, and it's pretty excellent. So, yeah, good for them.
But wouldn't you have other people asking why not my situation?
Well, so here's the thing. Now these days, having medical bills erased like that happens. It really truly does. So, that's a real thing still. So good. good on them.
Good. I agree. Good on them. And so let's talk about the way this movie was shot. Now, I'm a huge fan of the super up close, personal, really intimate way of shooting of shooting a film like this.
Loved this movie, right?
Yeah, I did right off the bat. Right off the bat with the mom giving birth, and then it goes right into her death. Like, that is, I loved it, and I loved every. I love how the movie did it. I love how the closeness of everything, the odd Dutch angles of, you know, you see Ed not only looking at his daughter for the first time, but then you fast forward a few minutes, then he's looking at his wife pass away, and he's like,
yeah.
The nurse takes the clamp off the finger, and she's like, it won't be long now.
Yeah,
it's just what, and it won't be long. Talk about like an up. You remember up how, like, in the first 5 minutes, you were just bawling by the end of that montage.
Oh yeah, for sure.
This movie achieved that too. Like, it's so sad. Jeez Louise, it just rips your heart out and doesn't let go. And again,
yep, I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. I love the way it was shot. How do you feel about the style of the cinematography?
I mean, it is very up close and personal, which isn't a big deal. The one thing I will say, though, because this movie does have a smaller budget, you can kind of tell in the cinematography. There's barely any, like, super large shots or anything like that. The biggest thing we get to any kind of, like, sequencing like that is the helicopter landing, where you see all the people in the same frame. But, I mean, you definitely feel like, you know, this is a smaller movie made on a smaller budget, so...
Well, it's also, this takes place when? In the 80s, the mid-80s?
No, it's like 1994.
1994, okay, mid-90s. Well, one thing you don't have to do when you're shooting like that is dress an entire street, because nothing's in the frame except what you're shooting.
Yeah.
So it's an easy decision when you're shooting a period piece, because it's much less expensive, because you don't have to, you're not seeing everything around the principal actor at the time
if
everything's so up close like that. And that's one thing, like, I never realized until like a few years ago, like, that's kind of brilliant. If you need to sidestep a big budget problem, just don't even show it. Just, you know, infer it. But then by doing the cinematography the way you're doing it, even if it's just a scene, you can really cut down a lot of budget costs. I think that's a great way to do it. But sure. What this also does is, I mean, for the same reason that like a dozen other movies out there, is it makes all the decisions that much more hard hitting for the audience too. Is you're because you're putting them in the frame of reference of the actors, of the characters. And you become part of that story in a way, because it's so up close and personal.
Sure. And
I've always adored that style of filmmaking. And a lot of people don't like it because they say it's just too disorienting and it's kind of like an offshoot of the Bourne stuff. But I've always really adored it. And I'm glad that they used it here too, because it grabbed me right away. Like, right in the first 10 seconds, I was like, okay, I'm in this movie because of this camera style. So I really dug that.
Yeah. So I enjoyed it very much.
And you're a girl dad,
so I
imagine on some level this got to you as well. Because
a lot of stuff kids wise gets to me anyway. But it's just like, you know, you get sad sometimes. You also, you know, as a dad, I feel for how people are and try to, you know, imagine what my life would be in their shoes, which is a terrible thing to do in a movie like this, by the way, to imagine that my wife had died already, and you know, my youngest child was, you know, terminal basically. So don't do that to yourself. It's bad for your well-being.
That's fair.
Bad for your mental health.
But I mean, that's the point. I mean, that's, people do have lives similar, parallel to this, and again, I'm sure it's going to grab them as well. So what else? Tell me some things you didn't like about this. There wasn't a whole lot I didn't like.
No, I mean, the one thing that I don't that I didn't really enjoy is a large part of this movie seems like it unnecessarily takes place at night, right? Like a lot of like not well lit rooms and things like that. This is something that, you know, harkens back, I already said about the cinematography. It feels like there's a lot of set pieces that don't really come into play. Like, none of this stuff could have happened in like a hospital room that was well lit. Or like, even when they're in the office talking about forgiving the medical bills, you know, there's like one light above this table full of people. Like, this would be in a fucking conference room. You know what I mean?
Well,
very well lit.
Dramatic and lighting is.
Sure. Know, no, I get it. I get it. You asked what I didn't like. It's, to me, like, that stuff, it just emphasizes stuff that's already slightly unbelievable, because like, look, miracles happen here, you know, basically, and we have to add the drama here. Like, it could just, you know, we can have this a normal conversation. So I don't know. Like overall though, like I enjoy this movie, man. It is sad. It is something to, you know, to evoke emotion. And generally, you know, you have a movie that makes you cry, that it's tough to deal with sometimes, but the way this movie ends, it's so satisfying. And the problem I have here though is you kind of know what's going to happen, right? Because like, look, if this kid didn't make it, this doesn't ever get made into a story. So it does eliminate that prospect of like, hey, is this kid really in mortal danger? And here's the thing, though, I was still sad and thinking like, hey, maybe she won't make it. But then I realized like, bro, she has to make it. This is why we have the story. So
I don't think they have to make it. It just,
bro, if this kid dies before she gets to the hospital, this doesn't get to be a fucking movie.
You're right. You're not wrong about that. No way. Yeah, I mean, the story may be extraordinary itself.
And this is the busted ass system of the American, busted ass movie about the American healthcare system.
Just, how unfair and unbalanced it is.
Yeah, how bullshit it really is.
Well, I don't know if it's bullshit. I mean, it's the way it is for a reason.
It's bullshit.
Well, I mean, who are they to say who gets it and who doesn't? You know, I don't know how they do their list, but I imagine they're trying to be fair to everyone involved and not favoritism some people. I don't know how that is, but you're probably right. It is, you know, like so much of this is probably just so much of, you know, how life is lived. It's just probably bullshit. You know, you're not wrong about that, but.
She had to pay off $105,000 worth of medical bills for a dead person. Kind of feels like bullshit.
Not saying it's right. I'm just. I was like, it's right, but I don't disagree with you. I don't mind the lighting. As a matter of fact, I do disagree, but I don't mind the lighting and the dramatic effects. I just, because it doesn't take me out of it, and maybe it's because I was so into it that I didn't. Now maybe it did catch you off guard because you're just like, well, that's not real lighting for a hospital conference.
That's what I mean, right? Like, we're going to invite you into this conference room. We're going to have this meeting at 3:30 in the morning. No other lights are going to be on the hospital. You good with that? Oh yeah, no, I'll take the meeting. Sure.
Oh, so I mean,
this meeting, I'm going to harvest one of your organs.
They may have also been trying to accommodate shooting schedules also, and they just had to shoot some of the stuff. Yeah, and they had to shoot some of the stuff where they could get in for rent for cheap. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's got to play into it a little bit. I imagine sure. That is probably part of it. But yeah, I don't disagree with you on that one, but. Or I guess I do, but not in this so well it didn't take me out of it. But you know.
Okay, I have one other thing I didn't really enjoy this movie, and I'm gonna pose it to you because now I didn't know this story, right? Obviously, I didn't look it up. I try not to do that for stuff that I know that's a true story because I want to be, you know, we have a fresh take on it. But did you think these two people were going to end up together?
Ritson and Swank's
characters? Ed and Sharon. Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Okay, so for a while I thought they were until there's a real point where you realize that they ever never will. But for a while I'm just like, bro, his wife just died. You know what I mean? And I'm like, this woman's gonna come in here and like save the daughter and raise all this money, and then they're gonna get married and live happily ever after. Then I thought that like, what a bullshit story that is.
Well, no, then, I never even considered that. I never even.
For me, for like half the movie, it was in play.
Really?
So, yeah, I thought so.
Interesting. It was never even on my mind, to be honest with you.
That's weird. I thought for sure you would have latched onto that.
No, well, I mean, I guess I can't say that I never thought about it because, of course, it does cross your mind. But I never even I never gave more than 10 seconds of thought because it's just not that type of movie. And we didn't, especially when you find out why Hilary Swank's character is the way that she is. We're just not going there. She's looking for redemption. She needs to save a child because she lost a child. I mean, that's just pure and simple what it is. But I mean, the thing that took me off guard was, would she really have been? Now, let me ask you, would she really have been so foolish as to drink when she's the only guardian for those girls when their daddy's gone? So
I believe so. And the reason why is when you're an alcoholic. Now, listen, I've never dealt with alcoholism personally, but I know people who have gone through it. They will tell you there are some times where you just can't fucking help yourself. Like, it's just, I'm just going to have one drink. I can do it. And then an hour later, you drank everything in the house and you're blasted. Like, it happens. And that's one of the, those are called watershed moments in alcoholics, in AA. Where you know at this point things are different after this, and things were different. You know, obviously she had to deal with
the wrath of the family and, you know, basically being thrown out of the house. So I believe something like that absolutely could happen and probably did.
Well, so, and I was thinking after I watched it, was there no other way they could think to get that conversation of those two characters on the, in a, like, how else do you get that conversation though about, because then you learn that neither one of them is anywhere close to an angel.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I don't know. You know. From a story perspective, I don't know, but like, I definitely believe that that scenario could have unfolded. So
that's fair, I guess. That's super fair. I did like how there's also kind of some of that mid 2000s humor with, you know, how, for instance, in the close to the beginning of the film, when she just shows up at their house, and then and then Ed's mom just invites her in for dinner.
Yeah.
And then if she just like pats Ed on the shoulder and she like, what do you else do? A woman shows up with the cash with a wad of money. You let her in for dinner. Like,
well, so I told my wife, funny, I guess. You know, listen, she showed up with $3,500. You can at least give her a fucking plate of noodles.
Like, yeah, of course.
That's more than fair.
That's part of the charm though, between those two characters, especially the grandma. She has her moments. Sure. She definitely has her moments about, but that's part of the charm, especially between those two women, is like the play back and forth of, you know, being surrogate moms to these girls when they've lost their mom and damn near their dad, because he's just not in the, he's not in the mindset. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. He's working a lot, because when they do start to dig out of the hole, it's because he's working 7 days a week, you know, from dawn till dusk. You know what I mean? Sometimes later than that. So,
and I love how you think everything's going great, and then she sits down with the finances. She's like, "The good news is you're making $11,000 a month. The bad news is your expenses are 13."
$13. He's just like, "God damn it!" See, look, that's the time when he's got to like, "Fuck."
Well, that's the time when you realize, like, okay, I cannot get on top. I just can't do it. Mm-mm. So, I mean, I wonder.
Paid down $11,000 last month. Oh hell yeah, that's great. We also spent $13,000.
Yep. And I'm sure that's before groceries and everything too, but neither here nor
there. Yeah, no, you're upside down there. That's
so let's just take 10 seconds and talk about, now we talked about Suncoast a couple weeks ago.
Sure.
How do you quickly relate this to Suncoast?
So, I mean, they're very different types of movies. Obviously they both revolve around death, at least in some capacity. This one has a little bit of a happier ending than Suncoast, obviously. I think Suncoast is a better movie than this. I'm not saying this is bad. I mean, I enjoyed Suncoast very much. I thought it was a very good movie. And when I score this movie here shortly, you'll find that I don't find them too far apart. Personally, though, I think Suncoast is a slightly superior film, just because they are two different types of movies. Now, they're both based on true stories and semi-autobiographical, so I think that's kind of cool. We got a couple of these movies in close succession that both turned out to be pretty good. So I'm happy to get a couple of them back to back. How about you?
I agree. As you remember, I wasn't as fond of Suncoast as you and Chris.
Well, now, Chris really liked Suncoast.
He did. He gave it a 9. So I like this movie. I think this movie ekes it out a little bit.
Oh, okay.
And I think now, I mean, you still have you have Laura Linney and Woody Harrelson, you know, and Hilary Swank and Alan Ritchson. I mean, they're fine duos. There's nothing wrong with the duo pair there. I personally gravitate more towards. So I think Ordinary Angels is a slightly better movie, and I personally gravitate towards it more.
Okay,
but I tried before I was. For the last day and a half, 2 days, I've been trying to make sure that those two things were exclusive and not because of the other. But I didn't want to, and I really do think Ordinary Angels is a hell of a movie. I think Suncoast is a hell of a movie. But I think Ordinary Angels for me ekes it out in the long run, because it just, I think Hilary Swank and Alan Ritchson do more with their characters. There's more for them to do in this movie than Woody Harrelson and Laura Linney had in Suncoast, which is maybe unfair, but it is what it is. Okay. So, yeah, I think Chris would probably disagree with that, but this one to me just is a little better. So, and it's, you know, theatrical, and I think that a lot of people won't see it because it's theatrical. Not that millions of people are watching Suncoast, because they're obviously not, but
No, yeah. I feel like a movie like this, though, where it is theatrical, like, I think this movie will have much better legs as a streaming film. You know, whatever one it ends up on. I'd bet on Amazon, by the way, because of Alan Ritchson. But I bet you it gets a lot of viewing once it goes to whatever streaming service it's going to end up on.
I mean, that in there is the problem. I've been hearing a lot of chatter about that lately, too. Of like, we're still kind of in the middle of how does theatrical survive in a streaming world and vice versa. It's just that weird. And I think you're right, though. This thing does get viewed 10 times more than tickets ever sold on streaming.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because, yeah, people that they just didn't want to go watch it. And that, like, now they're like, oh, you got to check this out. Or Hillary Swank, got to check her out. Like, it's unfortunate, but I think they have better legs on streaming service only because, like, the potential is unlimited. Red theatrical kind of has a limited audience.
Well, but the other thing, like, is in a situation like Ordinary Angels, much like Suncoast, a movie that doesn't have a large budget, because in the realm of, like, full two-hour movies, running at $13 million is a fucking bargain. You know what I mean? With two legit stars in it. You know, a movie like this absolutely could have came out on Netflix or Hulu or, you know, Prime Video or Apple TV, and you wouldn't have batted an eye at it. You know what I mean? It would have fit right in. It's got decent production value. Besides the fact it has, like, the religious overtones, there's not a whole lot of things that would be like, oh, you know, it's Easter time. Here's a streaming movie about some miracle stuff. You know what I mean? It would fit right in there.
Oh, yeah, I agree. There's nothing. Yeah, absolutely it would. But I mean, as far as, so you don't think this is the Easter movie for the year?
I don't, because it's too early. And here's the thing. There is a little bit of church related stuff in this movie. Okay. You know, a point where, you know, the family goes to church for a while and then they don't. And they're welcomed back to church on Christmas Eve. Right. Which is nice, you know, because the preacher, like, singles them out. He's like, hey, Ed, it's good to see you and your family again. Like, that's a nice thing, but, like, they talk about, oh, man, this lady's a gift from God, but, like, they don't talk about, hey, we got to get together and we got to pray together and things like that. It doesn't do much of that, where most of these Easter-type movies are really heavy-handed in that kind of aspect. So I don't believe that this is the Easter movie of the year.
Well, what is then? We went over.
I don't know. I'm actually pulling my thing up right now to take a look. So
that's very strange, because, like, I don't even think anything's slated for, unless,
no, and there almost always is,
unless something is, we're not considering something an Easter movie, and it is an Easter.
Maybe
movie.
It's Ghostbusters. Let's be honest.
I mean, sure, but no. I mean, all funniness aside, maybe this is supposed to be it, and I'm just hoping it has a second life when it comes to Easter, but. I think it'll unfortunately be. I think Dune killed a lot of anything before Dune got killed by Dune, so that's unfortunate. But I do think this movie deserves some attention from people, even if nothing else. Even if people like, I like Alan Ritchson, I'll check him out. Like, even if people are curious how he does this, I imagine.
Well, yeah, here's the thing: this ain't Reacher.
No, not at all. It's the exact opposite. It's just a big tender father who doesn't know how to do anything after his wife dies.
No, and here's the thing. I get it. It's tough. All right, calendar time. So when is Easter?
The end of March, early April. Maybe the end of March this year. Good Friday is in March. So, yeah, it's in March.
Okay.
What do you think?
I'm looking at the list here.
Keep in mind, it's an audio podcast. Got to keep talking.
Immaculate with... The horror movie? No, not that.
No. Imaginary? No. No, no.
No.
Nope, nope, nope. Sting, maybe. I don't know.
Well, Godzilla vs. Kong?
Yeah. That's the Easter movie for the year, Godzilla vs. Kong. Yes, absolutely. I mean, we did almost have a Top Gun Thanksgiving and a Top Gun Christmas. We did almost have those things.
Yeah, I mean, because we should. Wait, first off, though, let me find out when is Easter. I should know that.
I feel like, yeah, it does.
Sunday, March 31st. So okay. Technically it is Godzilla and Kong.
Good. Glad. Super glad.
Finally got the Easter movie we deserved.
Yes, sir. Well, I mean, look.
Maybe you're right, though. Maybe this is the...
I think this is the intended Easter movie. I have to imagine it is. Because, like, we'd already know about it if there was something we'd already know about it.
Well, there's something that says 47 Days with Jesus. But it comes, that's not a regular release movie.
No.
I don't know.
So we gotta imagine that this is, if it's not the Easter movie, it certainly can qualify as one for families if they want one.
What if it's Arthur the King?
I mean, I could see how that would be. We've seen the trailer. We've seen a lot of the elements come together. I'm sure that could be.
Yeah,
they could be shooting for that slot. I don't know.
We should move. I mean, there's not one that really sticks out. I'm sorry. I thought for sure that there might be, because, like, listen, this may fill that thing, but I would think it would come out 2 weeks from now if it was really going to slot into that. But
well, maybe they're trying something different and seeing if it has legs, like a second wind when Easter hits and people just go see it like crazy. Because The View is doing an unusual amount of coverage on this movie, so maybe there's something. I don't know, but yeah. So let's we should move to score this bad boy then.
Sure, we got a good run of movies coming.
We do, and I'm really excited for the summer as well. So, and remember, by the end of April, we got to do our what we're excited for in the summer, and I'm really psyched about that. I've already started my list. So
good.
Let's move to score this bad boy then. You want to go first? Or you want to go second?
I'll go second this time.
All right. Ordinary Angels with Hilary Swank and Alan Ritchson. This movie hit all of my boxes. This is a solid 7 for me. And I know what you're going to say, Roger, and it's tired. Give it up. I know what the 7 is. I get it. But
what's
this is
7?
Joker.
Oh, was it? That's what you gave Joker?
A 7, yeah. That's what you guys always make fun of me for.
I would never do that.
What? You make fun of me? Sure. But this to me is a 7. It's it's incredibly emotional, but needs to be. And Hilary Swank and Alan Ritchson, they bring their A game. And that's all I can ask for, really, when it comes to people putting in performances. And I really do appreciate what they're able to do with Alan Ritchson. I mean, Hilary Swank is great. We know that. Alan Ritchson is Reacher, and he's a big dude that knocks people's heads off. And in this one, he somehow pivoted to play a warm and tender husband and loving dad. And that's a tough thing to do. But I think this movie is pretty great. I would recommend this to anyone. It doesn't even have a lot of religious elements, so you don't have to worry about that. I think it's just one of those movies that is just a human drama that unfolds in front of you, and it's very powerful for the small budget that it has. This is a 7 for me, and I think that's where it sits.
Okay, so that's good. I'm not too far off. I'm actually going to go with a solid 6 here. I thought this movie's pretty good from start to finish. Checks a lot of the emotional boxes. Did squeeze a tear or two out of me. Not afraid to, you know, admit that anymore. Definitely, you know, hit you in the parental feels. So I liked it. I think everybody plays their role very well. And it feels like a smaller movie that does, you know, that kind of, you know, punches its way up, you know, where it is. Once you realize after watching the movie, you're like, hey, you know, most of those scenes are pretty small. They still are very impactful without having to waste a bunch of money. Because this, like I said, for only $13 million or so, this is a great run. So I enjoyed this movie very much. And I think a six is where it sits for me.
Okay, we're not too far off then.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So, all right. So, if someone said, "I only have time for one," Suncoast or Ordinary Angels, your thing is Suncoast.
So, I would say Suncoast. Well, so here's the thing, though. Suncoast is rated R. This movie is not. So, those are two very different.
Yeah, you're right.
Realms to live in there.
You're right about that. I didn't even think about that, but you're right. And I also think there's a lot more of that middle ground that I always talk about, the emotional middle ground going on in this movie than in Suncoast. But I do think that's the case. But I would say Ordinary Angels, you'd say Suncoast. I'm sure Chris would say Suncoast, I'm sure as well.
Sure. Well, I mean, he gave Suncoast a 9. And listen, where he may have liked this movie, I don't think he would have outranked.
No, I don't either.
Outranked Suncoast for that.
Thank you for joining me this evening, Roger, for the A yes, episode sir. Of 372. This has been episode 372A of 4, The Love of Cinema, a movie podcast. Each new episode posts every Tuesday and Friday morning at 5 a.m. on the podcast service. Of your choice of the following 6, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Please leave a comment or two and rate and subscribe. Every little bit helps. More importantly, thank you very much for listening. Check out the show on Twitter at Love Cinema Pod. I am at Grayson Maxwell 1.
I am at Rog Stillion.
Chris does not have a Twitter handle or X handle, I should say. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook, always posting interesting news stories on social media. Send us an email to fortheloveofcinemapodcast@gmail.com. And next week, we're talking about The Man That Is Dune Part 2. And we're going to be taking a look at a recap of the Oscars, because next week is the Oscars week.
We're going to fuck it. We're going to do it live.
We're going to do it live.